I know. It's getting like wall drugs in South Dakota. Mile after mile of requests that you'll pull in and vote for the London Walks team in the 2022 Superstar Awards competition. But we're almost there now. Five more signs, five more days. And then it's into the magnificent Black Hills. We so want it to be the faces of London Walks guides up there on Mount Superstar 2022. And in any case, for this day in London history, March 17th, this request is the respite, the calm before the storm. As for today in London, maybe try the Vietnamese restaurant Viet Food at 34-36 Wardour Street in Soho. Okay, today in London history. "Curiouser and curiouser," cried Alice. She was so much surprised that for the moment she quite forgot how to speak good English. "Now I'm opening out like the largest telescope that ever was." If you open out what happened in London on March 17th, 1968, open it out like the largest telescope that ever was, it's curiouser and curiouser. It being the demonstration against the Vietnam War. It came to be known as the Battle of Grosvenor Square. Grosvenor Square because the American Embassy was there. I think it's fair to say the demonstration got out of hand. Dozens of protesters and 117 policemen were injured. 246 protesters were arrested and charged. The protests started peacefully enough. It formed up in Trafalgar Square and marched toward Mayfair, toward Grosvenor Square. The march was led by, amongst others, the actress Vanessa Redgrave. Somewhere in the estimated crowd of 15,000 protesters was a 24-year-old named Mick Jagger. Well, 1968 was, after all, the year of the Rolling Stones' street-fighting man. It's curiouser and curiouser, first of all, because of the 1968 timeline. You go through the 1968 timeline, what you see is that protest-wise, London was in the vanguard. It doesn't make any sense at all. Not least because, unlike Tony Blair and a later American military adventure in a faraway land, Harold Wilson, the British Prime Minister at the time, said, "No, terribly sorry, but we can't really," when LBJ tried to get the British military to go halfway around the world to stop dominoes from toppling. But it's the timing of the big 1968 events and developments that have me scratching my head. Here's that timeline. The Tet Offensive was in January and February of 1968. So, yes, that preceded by a couple of months the Grosvenor Square protest. And anti-war maverick presidential candidate Eugene McCarthy did unexpectedly well, 42% in the New Hampshire primary, the first of the U.S. presidential primary races. But that's it. Well, there is one other event, for lack of a better word, a horrifying event. The My Lai Massacre. Time-wise, it's right there with the London protest. It happened the preceding day, March 16th. But it was 20 months before the world found out about the war crime that took place in that little hamlet in Vietnam on March 16th. So everything else, all the events, all the developments that are the historical equivalent of eternal flames, happened after the Grosvenor Square demonstration. Let me take you through it. For a bit of light relief, I've thrown in a couple of wild cards. On March 31st, President Johnson announced that he wouldn't run for a second term of office. Martin Luther King was assassinated on April 4th. The other American primary elections took place in April, May, and June. Enoch Powell gave his infamous Rivers of Blood anti-immigration speech on April 20th. The famous Columbia University student occupation started on April 23rd. An American businessman bought London Bridge that same month. The Paris student uprising took place in May 1968, as did the Prague Spring. Bobby Kennedy was assassinated on June 5th. The year had to have a pandemic. That was the Hong Kong flu pandemic. It started on July 13th. The Democratic National Convention in Chicago took place in August. There were running battles between protesters and Mayor Daley's fearsome police force on the streets of downtown Chicago. the British Post Office introduced first-class postage in September 1968. The world saw the Black Power salute at the Mexico City Olympics on October 16th. On October 31st, LBJ announced an end to the bombing of North Vietnam. So there you have it. Trying to account for the Battle of Grosvenor Square by referring to the 1968 timeline is a non-starter. I sometimes half wonder, was it just something in the air? Or something about the month of March itself? Let's look at that for a minute and see if we're any the wiser. For Jewish people in olden days, this month was consecrated to their opening round of festivals. In the Roman calendar, March held first place for many years. That was the case here as well until 1752, when Parliament passed an act that said the year should commence in January. The French had made that move nearly 200 years earlier, in 1564. The Scots were also far ahead of us in that regard. They made that change in 1599. The Anglo-Saxons called the month Lenet Monat, length month, to indicate that now the days begin to exceed the nights in length. But back to the Romans we go for the name we know the month by today. It was named by Romulus in honor of his father Mars, the god of war. Why? Well, because the ground was firming up. Chariot wheels weren't going to be mired in mud. The Roman equivalent of farmers planting in the spring was making war. Were the protesters and the police hearing and responding to a distant primal drum, the drum of war? Perhaps worth mentioning here, for anyone who doesn't know, March days were deemed unfortunate for marriages. Why was that? Men going off to the wars, in some cases not coming back. Marry them and then see them go off maybe to die? No thanks. It's unsettling, March. Comes in like a lion, goes out like a lamb. Or how about the Scottish version? Having come in with an adder's head, goes out with a peacock's tail. The poet Spenser called it Sturdy March. And of course, you've got St. David's Day, the patron saint of Wales, getting the month underway. There's that wonderful old couplet. March, various, fierce, and wild, with wind-cracked cheeks, by wilder Welshmen led and crowned with leeks. Quite a vision, isn't it? And then our day, March 17th, St. Patrick's Day, the patron saint of Ireland. Born either in Wales or Scotland. No matter that, St. George, the patron saint of England, was born in Turkey. Famous, of course, for driving all venomous reptiles out of Ireland. The story is he made Irish soil so fatal to the race of serpents that they die at once on touching it. Equally nice, the story that King's College, Cambridge, being built of Irish wood, no spider doth ever come near it. Best of all, though, the story of St. Patrick using the shamrock to teach the doctrine of Trinity, because it's a plant that has three leaves upon one stem. Anyway, provides us with lots of food for thought, March. And in terms of that protest, I wonder if maybe in part there was something primordial going on there. Something to do with sap rising and blood heating. Something akin to stags clashing antlers and rutting. But let's end by hearing from a couple of young men who were there, who took part. They're madcap, these two accounts. Lots of mayhem and disorder. Not a whole lot of sense. And that chimes with my impression that whatever it was that happened there, and why it happened, it's being an anti-war demonstration. That was just the surface of something deeper, something more elemental. Had it been every inch an anti-war protest, it would have come in a different place on the 1968 timeline. Our speakers are, first, Dick Poynton. He went on to become the editor of the UK's first PC magazine, Personal Computer World. He's now at 77, well and truly into the sixth age of man, in the lean and slippered pantaloon with spectacles on nose and pouch on side. The second speaker is Mick Farren, dead now. Mere oblivion, sans everything. Mick Farren was the singer with the proto-punk band The Deviants. He was also a journalist and an author, a figure of some note in this country's counterculture scene. Here they are, Dick Poundton first. The first one in March turned into a real free-for-all afterwards, running down Park Lane, trashing cars and bank windows, very, very heavy. We, the Situationists, actually had a presence on the march and made this huge banner that said, "Storm the reality studio and retake the universe." Yellow letters on blue. It was very professionally done. We joined the march amidst all these trots, all chanting, "Ho, ho, ho, Chi Minh." And we were chanting, "Hot chocolate, drinking chocolate." And getting lots and lots of aggravation from all the trots around us. And as we went past Hyde Park Corner, this figure clad in black leather from head to foot came out of the crowd and joined us. And it was Mickey Farren. And it was the first time I ever spoke to him. And look, Mick Farren swore like a sailor, and he was anything but politically correct. So if you're squeamish, maybe hit the eject button right now. I didn't bolderize him. This is the authentic voice, the salty voice of the 1968 subculture. Mick Farren now. Saturday night, we'd been playing somewhere like Mother's Club in Birmingham, and we were coming back down the M1 and ran into these humongous police roadblocks, and they pulled out all our equipment. We said, "What the fuck do you want?" And they said, "We're looking for weapons." And we get back to London, and me and Sandy planned to go to the riot the next day. So we got up about lunchtime, 2 o'clock, as was our wont, and got our shit together. Nobody else could be bothered to go because they were still asleep. We went downstairs, and there were maybe 50 motorcycle cops at the top of Endell Street, and buses full of these geezers who look like they feed on vodka and raw meat and don't get let out except on riots. I thought, motherfucker, what's going on here? There wasn't exactly tanks on the boulevards, but shit, it was like Chile or something. So we went marching up to Center Point, where we ran into Miles, and we hooked up with the march somewhere by Tottenham Court Road and Oxford Street. We were marching along, and there were reports that Mick Jagger had been seen, and this was happening, and that was happening, and it was all very sort of aggressive. There were all sorts of Germans who were a real nuisance, because they kept linking arms and getting into that run that the Japanese had invented. We didn't really want to go that fast. We just got up, and we didn't feel too good, and we didn't need a lot of mad crowds doing the Japanese run, very disruptive, like Zulu impis getting wound up, and they kept doing these flurries of running on the spot, which got people very excited to the point that somebody tried to nose his car out of somewhere like Barrack Street through the crowd, and Miles kicked in his headlamps. I thought, Jesus, me and Sandy were coming down off speed, and we weren't as rambunctious as a lot of people around us. We had just meandered along. So we got to South Audley Street and started streaming down there, and everything halts and nobody knows what's going on. And there's all these rumors that they're tear-gassing people here and there. In fact, they weren't. We hadn't seen the U.S. Embassy yet, although there was another rumor that there were armed Marines who'd kill you if you actually got inside. Then everything started to move, and we went charging down Audley Street, and it seemed like the police had given way. That's what everybody assumed. We arrived on the grass in Grosvenor Square, where, although I didn't know it at the time, we had immediately been surrounded. So there we have these thousands of people boxed in on the grass. Though it's not that crowded, there's room to stroll around, except down by the end by the embassy, where it's so crowded you can't see anything. And we just started wandering about, and I remarked to Sandy, "It's like a fucking love-in." Then there was a thunder of hooves, and there we were in the middle of the charge of the Light Brigade, which was fucking scary. What little I knew, basically, from Napoleonic history, was get under a tree because it's very hard to swing one of those truncheons when you're on a horse and the other guy is under a tree. So the first charge goes through, and they're sort of whacking people, and one geezer on a white horse, who became quite notorious, whacked this girl on the head, at which point everybody became exceedingly annoyed and dragged him off his horse and kicked him. He got away a couple of times, but then he was surrounded, and when everyone closed ranks, he was just left there. And then people were hurling bits of turf and rocks and stuff, and then they'd retreat and charge again and retreat and charge, and people were getting hit and hurt and injured. And then we went home, just like that, and watched it on TV. And on that note, good night from London. See you tomorrow.